This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Andrew in Burlington. What do you got, Andrew?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Mads, you hit the nail right on the head, buddy. Because for me with this team is that there's absolutely no fight on this team. Because even last year during the playoffs, when they were down by like one run to the Astros, it felt like seven. Because like for me, it's this. If Severino throws at Benintendi's head, right, do you think they're going to come piling out of the dugout and like tackle the guy and punch him right in the stomach? No, they're just going to sit there in the dugout and be like, well, that was weird. You know, like, are we allowed to do that? Because for me, it's this. And in all seriousness, is that I think that their approach to the plate is total pink hat-ish, which is basically like, let's take a bunch of pitches. Maybe we'll get a walk out of it. Maybe we might luck out and someone will throw it to the backstop when we get a run off of a pass ball, right? Which is why these games are 9.5 hours, is because no one hits home runs. And I know that it could be a meaningless stat, but it just makes this lineup so easy to pitch to in the playoffs, because when you face good pitching in the playoffs, like, they're not going to be afraid to throw you a strike, because worst comes to worst, all you're going to do is hit a single.
So, Andrew, let me just stop, because I think you're hitting on, to me, this is so much more important than the clubhouse vibe and guys having fun and, like, that nonsense. They're changing the offensive approach. They want more swings early in the count. They want more aggressiveness. You know, launch angles, all this stuff. This, to me, is going to be the difference. This is going to be the thing. The Red Sox are sort of lagging behind. They're one of the teams that set the tone in terms of on base and all of that. The whole league caught up and started doing it. Then the league trended back in another direction, and the Red Sox have been slow to trend back in that other direction, and now they're going to follow suit. This is what I want to see.
So that's a big part of it. My question about this idea is, because look, they need to be more aggressive. As can you make guys who by nature are more passive, can you make them aggressive? Like, can is that something you can teach?
Right, you know, and we gave you these stats a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you were in or not, but something like, you know, Xander Bogaerts swung at fewer first or second pitches than any player in the major leagues, and third to last was Betts or Pedroia or someone. Like,
yeah.
When you look at all the guys that looked at pitches early in the count, the Red Sox have all the leaders. You know, they're all down there. So that's how they've been. That's how they were brought up through the system.
Yes.
Right, because that's how they built their team for years and years and years. That's the kind of players they wanted. That's how they developed them. And now they get to their fourth year in the major leagues after being in the system for 7 years or whatever it is, and they're telling them how to swing at the first pitch.
Right. They're gonna, you know, they want them to change everything.
And how's that going to go?
I don't know. And then on top of it, is it in their nature to play that way? Like, beyond being able to do it and learn it, is it even something that they're wired to do? And look, Chili Davis spoke about this in the last day. They finally caught up with him, some of the guys on the beat, you know, and played Henry's comments for him in spring training when he threw the coaching staff under the bus. And Chili Davis says, well, hey, look, you know, we tried to do what we needed to do to win games. And I think that's his way of saying, you can talk about launch angles all you want, but we don't have guys that can drive the ball like that. And so I'm eager to see how it goes. Bogaerts should be able to hit more home runs, there's no question. And certainly they should get more out of Martinez.
617-779-0985. Frank in Worcester. Hi, Frank.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Felger, I couldn't honestly agree with you more about this team not having an identity. I mean, can we just talk about the fact that Dave Dombrowski is incredibly out of touch with what the fans in the city want? I mean, he goes ahead and signs David Price and puts him in that clubhouse with David Ortiz. David Ortiz then retires, who he had a tiff with, and the chemistry is completely turned upside down. I mean, Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, but the fans in this city want ball players with three things: grit, balls, and a strong work ethic. And I think it's safe to say, when you look at this roster, that we don't have a clear-cut captain and a guy that you'd want to go to war with. I mean, what happened to the days, guys, when we had a GM that would put guys on the roster like Kevin Youkilis, Jason Varitek, and Pedro Martinez, guys that weren't afraid to drill someone in the ass and then roll up their sleeves and chuck nuts when it came to it? I mean, the only person that I could see coming out of this roster as a possible leader and captain of this team is Dustin Pedroia. And, I mean, guys.
Wrong.
Yeah, I'm just going to stop you there, because I've been waiting for that. I thought it was, too. And it feels like he's part of the problem as much as he's part of the solution.
Yeah, it's not Pedroia. And this is the problem. I'm not sure they have that guy. But again, I'm less worried about the chemistry. I'm talking
character, not chemistry. That's what you need to focus on.
I'm talking about the guy that digs into the batter's box, and a pitcher knocks him down, and he gets up and says, try it again. Try it again. And watch me belt one freaking 500 feet. Go ahead, do that. Come back in here. And it doesn't feel to me like they do that.
that there's a competitive thing that's
yes.
been missing.
Yes.
It's not a fun thing. It's not a chemistry thing. It's not a manager. We hate the manager thing. It's a
Well, Maz, I think you've made mention of it before. The losses really hurt them. And I'm not necessarily asking for someone to do a David Ortiz and beat up the phone, you know, in the dugout. But it just feels like when they lose a series or these last couple of playoffs, it's,
I was just going to say this. This is the kind of team. This is their identity. The losses don't really hurt. But if X says something in the broadcast, that really pisses them off. That's what they've been.
They're just not mean enough.
Unless you say something about them on the game broadcast, and then they'll show you up on the team plane.
So if that's what it takes to get it out of them, then I'm okay with that. Like, there's got to be something in there that gets them to dig in and go a little deeper.
They've taken on the identity of David Price.
So Price is a great example because on the mound, Price has the stuff to be a badass.
Talent's there.
Right? And Sales gets some edge to him, so I think Sale has some of it. It's just hard to infect the whole team on it on the days he doesn't pitch if he's not out there. But the other guys, there's no nastiness. There isn't that guy who's, you know, they could use like a Josh Donaldson or someone who plays with a red ass. Like someone like that.
Yes, absolutely. Here's Phil in Dedham. Hi, Phil.
Hey, what's up, Felga? I got an exclusive for the Felger and Maz program. You're hearing it here first. This year's team is the Ellen DeGeneres Red Sox. She comes out, she starts her show, everybody's laughing and dancing and having a good time before the show even started.
Worrying about the dancing.
Thanks, babe.
You know, a little too worried about the dancing, a little too worried about that. Again, it's not a fun thing. It's not a wanting to show up to work thing. It's a competitive thing.
And totally.
That's what, if Cora can get that out of him, great.
And just not being about, you know, not diminishing the challenge because you fear you might fail. Like, just embrace it, for crying out loud. Embrace that part of it and attack the opponent. Put them on their heels. Put doubt in their heads. It feels to me like the Red Sox play with doubt. They play with doubt.
It's the Cam and Taunton thought of the day. What is it, Cam?
The strength of this baseball team is supposed to be their pitching staff. And I look at it right now. First of all, you have three starters who are going to miss the start of the year between Rodriguez, Wright, and Pomerantz. And then I look at the bullpens here. Let's compare the Red Sox bullpen and the Yankees bullpen. You have the better closer, I would say that, because I think Kimbrel's better than Chapman, although Chapman got better in the second half last year than he was in the first half. But your setup, how are you going to bridge the gap from your starter to your closer? Because your setup men are all unreliable. Smith's coming off Tommy John. Thornburg, we have no idea. Joe Kelly is as reliable as a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. And the Yankees, you know, they have Robertson, Canely, Betances to get to Chapman. The Yankees have the better bullpen there.
They have a better middle relief, there's no question.
Yeah, the Yankees do have a better bullpen. You have a better rotation. Like, so, and I also think that they
do you have
can...
a better rotation to start the year, Cam? Who's got a better rotation to start the year?
The Yankees, because they have Severino and Gray, the second and third best pitchers in these two rotations to start the year. They're both better than Price.
Quickly, who is the Red Sox fourth starter to start the year? Say his name.
Hector Velasquez.
Never heard of him! Who is that?
Hector Velasquez.
It's actually Brian Johnson.
Well, no, Johnson's going the fifth game.
Yeah, Johnson's going fifth, I thought. Hector Velasquez. I say that. I've heard the name. Where have I heard the name?
He pitched last year. Yeah.
Where?
Here.
No, but like in what role?
Oh, God. He was a spot starter and then
bullpen
guy.
Oh, was that the neck tattoo?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I heard him. He's scary, dude.
Yeah, he is a little scary, yeah. Yeah, but he's the guy. And so, look, again, I don't care that they're not starting the year full bore in the rotation because they tried that. And it didn't work. And so I would rather sacrifice a little firepower at the beginning of the year to have it at the end. I think in that sport, you have to do it if you want to win a championship. So I'm okay with that part of it. But, you know, the bullpen thing, I'm not alarmed. There's enough there right now to get by. And then you can add a bullpen piece if you need to with a deadline. Maybe you get lucky and Thornburg comes back. I don't know. We'll see how that all shakes out. I mean, I have questions, too. I'm just telling you that. They are good enough. There is enough talent there for them to more effectively compete against the good teams in the league than they have.
Severino, Tanaka, Gray, Sabathia. I don't know who's their fifth guy.
It's Montgomery, I think.
Yeah, okay. Jordan Montgomery. You tell me. Where's that staff?
I like the Red Sox rotation better. Look, I mean, I like Severino, but he looked like he crapped his pants in the playoffs last year. Gray I like, but there's been some inconsistency there. It feels to me like they have number two and then a bunch of three and four guys. And again, Severino to remind has the stuff to be an ace. I don't know if he has the makeup. So the Red Sox have a legit ace. I mean, there's no question about Sale. And if they get Price, going, the 1-2 is pretty damn good. Price is a huge guy for him. Huge.
Okay.
That game on Friday might be bigger than opening day.
Did you put stock into his spring, which has been great?
I think there's a good chance Price has a good year. I think this is...
contract year.
Yeah, effectively. Right. And I feel like it does feel like he came in trying to turn the page on last year, if nothing else. I don't know if he did as good a job as we all want, but he's trying, and if he pitches well, it'll all go away.
We continue with your Red Sox thoughts. We continue with your Patriots thoughts. Coming up next, a Bruins minute and a Celtics minute. Bruins minute. You want them to go to first place? Because right now, technically speaking, they're in first place. Technically speaking, they can be the first place team. And the President's Trophy's back on the table, Murray.
Boo.
But more importantly, is Rick Nash done for the year? Could Rick Nash be done for the year? That's on the Bruins. And on the Celtics, I want to go back and grade Danny Ainge in his offseason. And just impart to you that maybe you need to let it play out a little bit to grade Danny Ainge's offseason last year. We'll get your thoughts on both of those things right after this.
The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I haven't been around, so I don't know the ins and outs of Rick's, you know, like exactly where he's at with his recovery. So that's the best I can give you on that one. So until we're back home in Boston, get a little more of an update. Then, you know, I get information, don't get me wrong, but we're not there. So that one's a tougher one to project.
Talking about Rick Nash. And this is at the end of a briefing where he gives updates on all the Bruins injured players. And he's got a clear sort of report on all of them. Bergeron's back. Krug's back. Chara's skating. McAvoy's skating. DeBrusk is about to start skating. Backes is going to skate in 2 days. Blah, 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 blah. And then he got to Rick Nash and says, I don't have anything for you. And so that was his answer. That was his quote. And then I click on the Globe website last night before I go to bed, just checking headlines. The Boston Globe, bostonglobe.com, not boston.com, bostonglobe.com. I don't know if we can show this on NBC Sports Boston or not, but I'll just read you the headline. The headline is, and it's a Kevin Paul DuPont story, which, you know, I know Dupes. He's been around a long time. Knows stuff.
Knows people.
Knows how to get things in there without getting it in there. And the headline is, has Rick Nash played his last game as a Bruin? I'm like, what? Where's this coming from, Dupes? Has Rick Nash played his last game as a Bruin? And then the story, and I'll read it to you, bears no real information, no inside information, or no sort of nothing. All he basically does is build it around that Cassidy quote, in which he says Cassidy gives you updates on everybody else, but he didn't give you an update on Nash. And he says, now the question lingers. Will the 6'4" right winger be seen again in the black and gold batting order anytime soon? Or at all, with but 8 games remaining in the regular season? He says it's beginning to sound doubtful. And so they slap that headline on there. Has Rick Nash played his last game as a Bruin? And then I pick up my paper. I still get the paper, and that's not the headline. The headline's far more mundane. Bruins do not clarify Nash's injury, comma, return. That's a very generic headline. They just don't clarify his injury or his return. But the online is, has Rick Nash played his last game as a Bruin? Question mark, which I'm like, great headline. That's a great headline, fellas.
Yeah, Bedard wrote the headline in the paper. The softer one.
No clickbait. So what's going on? So here's one way if you're a beat guy and you know something, but you can't write it, which is you say to the desk, you can go big on the headline, I just can't write it. But, you know, this doesn't look good for him. So go nuts on the headline, I just can't write it because I can't reveal my sources, or I can't, you know, divulge the information that I know, but he might not come back. So the headline writer says, has he played his last game as a Bruin? And the story doesn't read like anything, so DuPont's kind of covered. You could say, well, I'll just blame the headline guy. I don't write the headlines. And, like, that's sort of, I wonder, is DuPont playing a trick on us? Does he know that Rick Nash is done for the year?
So is the story still up on the web, right?
The story's still up on the web. They haven't changed the headline. The headline, in fact, they played it up. They actually moved it up on the website because it was probably getting clicks, because that's a hell of a good headline. Has Rick Nash played his last game as a Boston Bruin? He's up at the end of the year. He's going to be a free agent. So, you know, that's it. You make that big deadline move. He's a real difference maker. He's a real stud. You give up a real return. First round pick, former second round pick. Who cares about Spooner or Bolesky? But you give up a first and a second that you made a couple years ago for Rick Nash, and he ends up playing six games for you, and that's it? Do you think that's on the table?
Well, if you read into the Ryan Donato signing and when it happened, it could be true, because this injury happened the Saturday game, the 17th against the Lightning, right?
Yep.
So it happens on the Saturday. Sunday, Donato's signed. That following Monday morning, Nash took part in that practice skate, and he hasn't been seen since.
Right, he couldn't go, right?
So again, Nash has not skated, and presumably hasn't been on blades, hasn't even been on blades, since March 19th, the day he practiced in the morning, and then was unavailable for the game that night versus Columbus. The club is unwilling to disclose details of the injury, believed to have occurred March 17th in Tampa. Nash Tuesday night will miss his fifth straight game against the Jets tonight. So he plays on the 17th. He skates on the 19th in the morning.
Donato signed the 18th, the Sunday.
But then doesn't play that night and hasn't been on skates since. So, like, I mean, don't you read concussion? I think it's supposed to be an upper body injury.
That's what it is.
So they say upper body injury. And then, like, the fact that they have no sort of idea. Like, if it's a ligament or a bone or something, you have an idea.
Well, also with Cassidy, the way he's talked about other guys and their injuries, and Bergeron and McAvoy, he's been pretty open about what's going on. This? I got nothing. Like, I feel like that reads pretty ominously.
So, I mean, it could be concussion, yeah.
So if you're a Bruins fan, you just drop a little poop in your pants right there with that one, because that's a big piece.
Of course it is.
That's a big piece. And does Dupes know something that he's not really writing, but he let the headline writer do it anyway? And are they playing games with you, or is that just clickbait to get you to click on it because it's a hell of a good headline? Has Rick Nash played his final game as a Boston Bruin?
Oh, and I don't think it's clickbait.
Is that what's going on?
I mean, the Globe's still got a little bit of that, even on the web.
Yeah.
The highbrow thing that they don't do clickbait. They get some Bedard in them. So, I mean, or maybe Bedard's got some Globe in them. Either way, what's the difference? I don't think it's clickbait. I think it's real.
Quite a testament to the way that they've been playing, though, that no one's really mentioned it until now.
Right?
You know? But, like, oh, that's right. Rick Nash hasn't been around.
But to me, Stanley Cup chances? Rick Nash is a big part of it. That is a big boy, playoff-ready, experienced, not accomplished. You know, he's laid down in more playoffs than he's won. I'm not telling you, like, this is a decorated guy. But big body, who's been there, playing for a con, like, that's a big piece for you. That's your second line right wing to David Krejci. Now he could be gone for the year. Do we believe that?
Well, and I'll tell you, on top of it all, just his size in front of the net. He's just so hard to move.
And if it's a concussion, that must be a doozy to write him off, because the playoffs last two freaking months. And we've got 2.5 weeks to go until the playoffs even start. Call it 2 weeks. So what, you're going to rule him out for the next 10, 12 weeks? Is it, you already know it's that bad if it's a concussion? But if it's anything else, you should have a timeline, because injuries come with timelines. Ligaments are 2 to 4, bones are 4 to 6, et cetera, et cetera. So,
I don't know. You got me. I don't know what it is.
I think it's to be taken seriously, just because Kevin Paul DuPont doesn't strike me as a guy who dabbles in hot takery. Like, to see that.
He likes it. Like Bedard, he thinks he's above it, but he's not. He likes to come down here in the mud with the rest of us.
He called us carnival barkers, if
yes,
you remember.
Yes, he sure did. Right. He likes to pretend that he's above the carnival barking. So, but he can do it. He can do it with the best of them, believe me.
Oh, no. In fact, he originated as a carnival barker.
Yeah, come on. You can't give me a break.
Like the rest of us.
Right. At the Herald, he was just Kevin DuPont. Then he goes to the Globe and adds the Paul.
Name.
He added the Paul. Really, he did that.
Yeah, I didn't do that when I went to the Globe, but only because my name wouldn't translate.
But anyway, so there's that one. Just suck on that for a minute. If Nash could be gone for the year, is that... So, I mean, what do we do with that? And again, good job by the Globe on the clickbait headline. You got me. You got me thinking. You got my wheels spinning.
It's not a clickbait headline.
Okay, Bruins have a chance to go into first place tonight. Tampa loses at home last night to Arizona, one of the worst teams in the league. You are 2 points behind Tampa with two games in hand. You play Tampa twice this year going down the stretch. You are in the driver's seat for the first overall seed in the East, which would get you a wild card matchup again with these teams that we've been talking about, like a Columbus, like a New Jersey, like a Florida, getting to avoid Toronto in that first round. That's important to you, Maz, isn't it?
It is. I want that. Absolutely. I want to avoid Toronto. Toronto's a bad matchup for anybody. That team's scary.
Okay, so there's that. There's that Bruins item, 617-779-0985. Markelle Fultz, here's your Celtics minute. Returns to the Sixers last night for the first time in, what, 2 months? Since the 12th game of the year or something?
He missed 68 games, I believe.
68 games because someone took a steaming dump in his head about his jump shot and couldn't lift his hand over his shoulder.
It was a brutal jumper. Yeah, at the beginning, he was a mess at the beginning of the year.
Okay, so, but did he have surgery? Did he have anything?
Not
have any
that
procedure?
I'm aware of.
So, was he just getting his head straight?
Feels that way.
For 68 games.
Feels that way.
He returns last night and looks pretty good.
He was good. He wasn't great. I mean, you know, again, for a guy who hadn't played that, did he even play before the thing? I don't think
he played like 12 games.
I think he was dressed.
No, I think 4 games is all
okay,
played.
Yeah, I was going to say, really? He didn't play much. But last night, I think it was 14 minutes and or something like it. And I was watching all I watched every shot that he took. Okay, every shot that he took. The jumper's still not all that great. I mean,
he's pushing the ball.
One of them was a 15-footer and he airballed it. So, like, you know, now look, a lot of his buckets were on drives to the basket or around the basket. He distributed okay, handled the ball okay, but the shot is still a work in progress. I don't think there's any, like, you know, all of a sudden huge turnaround there. It's better, but it's still not good.
Okay, so the Fultz thing is just a jumping off point to me that when we look at Danny Ainge and we look at that offseason last year, and we look at that trade, we love it, right? Grand slam home run. And I say the trade, I mean all of his moves. Trading Isaiah as part of that package for Kyrie and the draft pick and moving down from 1 to 3 to get was probably the better player than Fultz or Ball anyway. And we sort of say he nailed it, grand slam home run. And that's been the story there. That's been the commentary for months, as it should be. It looked like he just killed it on both trades. And my developing opinion is it's a little early, folks. You know what? And I'm guilty of it, too, because I declared him the winner on those trades, too. Like, what a brilliant move to trade down and get the best player and pick up an extra high draft pick. Except everyone knew that Jason Tatum was the more NBA-ready player than those three to begin with. Like, that was, even if people had Fultz and Ball ahead of Tatum, they all said, well, Tatum's ready in year one and these other guys aren't. You know, Tatum's going to be the best player in year one. This is about the long, but we all forgot that, right? We all just said, well, Tatum's a better player. Well, those other two guys are more projects anyway. We're not going to know this year who's the best draft pick.
No, that's going to take a while. Yeah, it's going to take a while. And the other thing to me is that, you know, when you look at the draft picks, it looked like they were going to get a Laker pick there in the top five, and now they're not getting that.
Okay, so this is, you know, the three key elements. You move from 1 to 3 and got the better player. And this was all the commentary in the beginning of the year. You ditched off the Brooklyn pick and not the Lakers pick, and that, well, isn't Danny smart because the Lakers are going to suck. The Lakers are actually going to be worse than Brooklyn. And, oh, you got Cleveland to take damaged goods and Isaiah Thomas. Idiots! Trader Danny! Nailed it again! Well, now let's look at those three elements. The Lakers pick was not better than the Brooklyn pick by a long shot. The Lakers are sitting in the 12th lottery position, and Brooklyn's down like 5 or 6.
They're at 6 right now, Brooklyn is.
Okay, so you lost that one. Yes, you traded damaged goods in Isaiah Thomas, but guess what?
You got damaged goods back.
You also got damaged goods. Everyone just sort of ignored the fact that Kyrie's got a long injury history himself, and he didn't even make it through the season, and you don't know if he's going to finish the season for you. And on the draft picks, like, again, give me Tatum. But hold your horses on that. Everyone knew Tatum was going to be the guy in year one anyway, right? Everyone. Anyone.
Yes, Tatum was ready, more NBA ready than those other two.
Even the players, even the teams that took those players ahead of you would have said Tatum in year one is going to be the better option. But this isn't about year one. This is about what they end up being, what's their ceiling. And I have a hard time believing that Fultz or Lonzo Ball have a higher ceiling than Tatum, given the fact that neither of them can really shoot. So how high can your ceiling really be? But it's really a marathon, not a sprint on that one. And so that's my Celtics take. It's like, hold your horses on that trade. Let's, you know, we don't know how that all played out. You lost the draft pick swap. You should have given them L.A. instead of Brooklyn. You know, you gave them the wrong pick there. So let's see on the draft picks, and let's see if Kyrie Irving can get healthy and you know, be a functional player health-wise over the full season for a long period of time.
So now the Celtics claim that they were going to take Tatum first no matter what.
That's right.
Right? So from their standpoint, like, the trade was still a good trade. I believe that they regarded Tatum as the best player in the draft. I do. But the deal, I mean, that Laker pick is at 10 right now.
Ugh. Okay. So
unless they win the lottery, that's not going to pay off this year.
Your Bruins thoughts, your Celtics thoughts. Open lines at 617-779-0985. To you right after the update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Marco with the ball, 5 on the clock, into the lane, down low Markel, right at lamp, good! Fultz puts it in! They've just brought the number one pick into the ball game, and he's a big factor.
You ask me who would I take? Tatum. Would I make that Kyrie trade any day of the week? I'm just saying. I think we all jumped the gun on the grade of that trade.
I mean, it looked like a landslide at the beginning.
You've got to see if Irving stays healthy. Oh, but, I mean, you'd still make it. So I'm not saying, like, don't make the trade. I'm just saying the final analysis has to come in. Irving has to stay healthy, and he has to stay here.
Well, let me ask you this.
And Tatum has to wind up to be a better player than Ball and Fultz.
Okay, and what if something crazy happens and they actually end up in the top five in the lottery? What if they get the pick this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's like a 3% chance of that, but...
I'm just saying, let's say the ping pong balls go right and they end up there.
I don't give them credit for it. You just won the ping pong balls.
Okay,
but... You didn't... You know, I'd give you credit if you shipped off L.A. versus Brooklyn because you knew Brooklyn would be worse. But Danny got all this credit. Remember all this credit he got for saying, ooh, he got him to take the Brooklyn pick when the Lakers pick's going to be a better pick? And it was just the opposite. So he did not handicap that properly. I don't know, maybe Cleveland all along said, no, give us Brooklyn. We know they're going to suck. You know, who knows? But again, I'm just saying the way it was played here was that Danny was one step ahead of everybody and he got him to take the wrong pick. No, just the opposite.
No, I thought, and to me, they need the pick in this draft. Like, they just have to hope they get lucky with the ping pong balls. I'm not holding my breath. I'm not telling you that. But this draft, at the top of this draft, is good. It is really good.
Okay, so to your phones. Rob in Leominster on the Nash injury. What do you think, Rob?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, there's a video on YouTube. If you just search Paquette Hits Nash, it shows it's halfway through the third period.
We just watched it. We just watched
McQuaid dumped it up, yeah, and Paquette pretty much launches right up because Callahan's on him. He's looking over his shoulder, and he catches him right in the chin. I mean, it's hard to believe it's not a concussion.
Okay, so I mean, I just believe it's a concussion because they're so cagey about it, and, well... Pretty much every other injury we know other than Backus and DeBrusque, and they think DeBrusque is a concussion. Like, concussion's like this gray area thing. Like, you can't mention it. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to divulge it. The timetables are, you know, different for everybody because it's such a, you know, new science and nebulous thing. And so that's just my guess because every other guy we know. Well, we don't know what Char is either, do we? Well, whatever. To me, I just, and then I watched that video. Again, in his last game, Paquette got him up high.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He got hit, it looked like, right under the chin. I mean, that's where it looks like he got hit.
But again, for the Globe then to say, Rick Nash played his last game as a Boston Bruin, that's saying they're going to rule him out for the next 3 months?
See, so this makes you think the concussion is bad.
Like, that's got to be really bad.
Hasn't Nash had one before? Doesn't he have a little bit of a concussion history? I'd have to look at that. I know there's somewhere in the postseason I thought he was the victim of a headshot somewhere.
And again, I just wonder if the Globe's playing games with us because their newspaper headline's different and DuPont's story doesn't offer anything other than Cassidy's sort of nebulous answer yesterday. Has Rick Nash played his last game as a Bruin? Does DuPont know something and didn't want to write it? So they put it in the headline. I'm saying good move if you did. But that's a big one. That's a big one for the Bruins if he's out.
Oh, sure it is, because the whole idea of when Donato got in there was to have the three of them together.
He's had a few on record in 2013 and in 2014.
Okay. See, to me, that's a, you know, and the fact that, let's say the Globe does know something, then the symptoms are bad. Like, the point being, the indications are it isn't, you know, I say run-of-the-mill concussion. But some guys have them, and Al Horford gets one, and sometimes you think, well, that didn't look that bad. If Nash, like, sometimes you can tell at the beginning, it's going to be a while.
Dakota and Braintree on the Celts. Hi, Dakota.
So, you know what I hate is when, you know, you guys try to find a reason to second guess or beat up on Danny Ainge instead of giving him.
Why is that wrong?
Because look at what he has done.
No one's saying he's bad.
With a team that has been depleted. When we signed Shane Larkin, nobody even knew who Shane Larkin was. This guy has been actually a big reason for the success this year. Okay, without Shane Larkin, this team has fallen off.
Oh my God, big deal. Shane Larkin, what do these games mean?
Dakota, you can't be serious.
Good God, the Shane Larkin thing.
I'm not just saying Shane Larkin. I'm saying guys like Daniel Theis, your shirt guy, Aaron Baines, who we thought was whatever pickup, ends up being a starter for most of the year.
You gave me this stuff about the previous group. You would call and talk my face off about Jay Crowder and call up and talk my face off about this guy or that guy. I've heard this before.
Michael.
Dakota.
I was, I was the Steven? One last year that was saying to trade Isaiah, to trade most of this team, except Marcus Smart and a few others.
No,
okay?
you filled so much crap in my head about Jay Crowder, it's not even funny. You're the Steven, you are the Jay Crowder contract guy. How much time did I have to waste with you talking about Jay Crowder's great contract?
Michael, that is Steven, correct.
Thank
for
you.
What Jay Crowder gave them in flexibility for this team, he was good. But it doesn't mean you can't trade a guy when you're getting back Kyrie Irving, one of the top five players.
What's wrong with second-guessing a GM, Dakota?
Well, my point is, if there was the GM of the award of the year right now would go to Danny Ainge for what he's doing with so many injuries to major key players. And this is a team that might be able to get through the first round without Kyrie Irving,
so listen, I agree with you. Give him the award. I'm fine with me. Is it unfair to say that the jury is out on the final analysis of these trades?
No, the jury is in, Michael.
Home piece. You pathetic
home piece. How is that a home piece, Michael? Explain to me. I don't need to wait until next year. I don't need to see how a ping pong ball is going
to
drop.
You need to see what the players become.
Excuse me?
What if
Fultz becomes a better player, Dakota?
Exactly.
Okay, Tony, if Fultz becomes a better player, I'll give you my company, okay? It's not going to happen.
I want that in writing.
Okay, I don't know if I want your company and saddled with all that debt and mismanagement. I want no part of
first
it.
First of all, Michael, I have no debt, okay? I'm very profitable and have no debt, so don't tell me you have a company with any debt.
Tremendous dysfunction internally in that company.
Not just profitable, very profitable.
There's no dysfunctional, okay? I've got six offices around North America.
Oh, my God, here we go. We got young Baron here on the line. I say it again.
Is he in Canada?
Beautiful landline, though.
He does. Best landline in the business. I'd make the trade again. I'm not criticizing him for the trade. I'm just saying, to be fair, you have to let these things play out for the final analysis. And for you to say that the final analysis is in is really sad, Stephen. Really sad. You've got to see if Kyrie Irving stays healthy. You've got to see if Tatum does end up a better player than Ball and Fultz. You need to see this. He miscalculated the draft pick thing. The Brooklyn pick was the better pick. They gave up the wrong pick if they had the choice to give up the pick. They gave it, so that's already in. So you've already lost that piece to it. Let's see how these other ones play out. That's all. I'm the one who's being fair. I'm just saying, in the final analysis, let's see what these pieces become, and then we can finally grade it.
And this is a draft to be in, too. Like, to have the Brooklyn pick in this draft versus Sacramento in the next one, to me, this is the way to go.
Let's see what Brooklyn ends up with.
You think Dakota has offices in the Dakotas? I wonder, like, he's got six offices in North America.
Does he include the one in his mother's basement?
Like, what?
Is that one of the satellite offices of Steven?
He's got six offices in North America, Murray. North Quincy, North Andover, Winthrop, Chelsea, Medford, and Malden.
And his uncle's garage. Long commercial free segment next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Have you had that collective meeting with Coach Belichick and Tom that you talked about?
Yes, we met, and I meet individually with each of them. But the thing that I don't know if it's completely understood, that Bill and Tom communicate and meet a lot.
Bill Tom has 2 years left on his contract. Have there been any extension talks?
Yeah, you know I'm not going to talk about contracts and personal situations, so we'll just let that one go. Along with all the other contract questions.
Okay, we got your phones the whole rest of the program. Just reset our Patriots topics off the top. And now Bill has spoken a couple times. Kraft spoke yesterday, et cetera, et cetera. So they've all spoken. Kraft has said that they've met behind the scenes there at Gillette. And I believe all of that, and we've heard them answer all the questions. I just think nothing's been resolved. Very little has been resolved. I think their issues still remain. I think Greg Bedard wrote something along those lines in the Boston Sports Journal. He says, we know Kraft, Belichick, and Brady have met, .. And that's it. And that's it. He says, to sum up from Kraft's comments yesterday, things don't seem that stressful with Gronk. Kraft's not second-guessing his coach for the Malcolm Butler decision, and the owner, coach, and quarterback have at least broken bread together. And if you just stop there, that would seem to be good news on three important fronts heading into the 2018 season. But here's my biggest question with mostly the state of the triumvirate. Why are we so short on specifics, writes Bedard. On Sunday, Belichick said, Tom and I have always had a good line of communication, that whole line. And then he says that Kraft said that they had the meeting. And Bedard says, well, that's nice, but at the minimum, a more meaningful response would have been, we had the meeting and I'm confident that we're all on the same page. But there was nothing like that, which is true. You know, Bill has talked about meeting with Tom and talking with Tom, and he'll take his word for it face to face. And Kraft has said that they've met and da-da-da. Has any of them said that we're all on the same page?
No, not that I remember.
Okay, so that's Bedard's point, and I sort of think that's another shoe to drop. I don't know if they've really hammered out their differences. Still plenty of time for that, but is there still some meat on that bone? If you care to weigh in on that, we can.
But how could they hammer this thing out unless Belichick reverses his stance on Guerrero?
That's right.
Like, he would have to concede or cave in.
Yep.
You see that happening?
Ultimately, maybe. Maybe.
I don't.
I mean, I don't know how likely it is, but maybe. We'll see. And then the whole Josh McDaniels story in the Boston Globe. Jim McBride, good job getting an exclusive. And I feel stronger than ever that Belichick's basically one and done. Maybe two. But he's not here for the long term. And that is because Josh McDaniels basically says that he was given assurances of the future. And is you know, and in the same breath said that there's no guarantee that he's going to be the next coach. But he did say, I wasn't 100% sure what the future was. I just hadn't had any clarity on that. So where did I fit in? Were there any plans? I just didn't have much clarity on what my role was here moving forward. But once I heard from Robert and Bill on that Tuesday, it just gave me reason to pause and consider this whole situation. And so, again, McBride points out that no assurances were given that he would be the next head coach. But what other assurances could there possibly, what could possibly have been made clear for Josh McDaniels?
I mean, the only thing you can do is you give him an absurdly long-term contract with all guaranteed money, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're making X for the next 6 years. But in the same breath, McDaniel says he wants to be a head coach again.
So I'm telling you, there's only one thing that they could have made clear, and that he's the next guy. And they just all can't admit it for a lot of reasons. You can't make Belichick a lame duck. You don't want to add that distraction onto the top of the season. And there's a whole other component to the league, and that's the Rooney Rule, where you can't hire a coach without first interviewing minority candidates and considering minority candidates. So if they already have a coach in waiting and they declare it, they violated the Rooney Rule. They at least have to go through the process of interviewing other people.
There's no way Bill Belichick, and I'm not dismissing that part of it too, the Rooney Rule.
Which, by the way, I think is so stupid. I mean, and I'm all for affirmative action, and I'm in favor of that stuff. But I just think to hold teams that have good track records in terms of minority hires is patently ridiculous. Like the Raiders. The Raiders got in trouble, were looked at, because they ostensibly didn't interview other candidates. They just handed it to Gruden. This is a team. I think their GM is Reggie McKenzie, an African-American who's been their GM for like a decade. Weren't the Raiders the first team to hire an African-American coach? In Art Shell?
Art Shell, right?
They brought him back?
And they had him back? Didn't Hugh Jackson coach out there for a time? Like, if there's any team in the National Football League that is colorblind, it's the Oakland Raiders. You can say a lot of things about the Davis family. One thing you can't say is that they give two poops about what color you are. They could care less, and they've had tons of African-American hires and minority hires. And so the league's going to look at them for the Rooney Rule because they gave the job to Gruden? Like, that's just, use common sense. And I'd say the same thing about the Patriots. Bobby Greer was your GM here for a couple of years, for crying out loud. So, whatever. That's just a side piece. They can't admit that Josh is the next guy for a variety of reasons. That's one of them. But he's the next guy. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, for continuity's sake, I guess it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable. But I'm sorry. I still can't erase how his first head coaching gig went. And the fact that he made, you know, his first pick in the first round, Tim Tebow.
I don't feel great about it. I think McDaniels is wildly overrated. I'm not saying he sucks, but people talk about him like, you know, Kraft said it yesterday. He's the best offensive coordinator in the league. And I heard that and said, what? That doesn't make you, just because you have Tom Brady doesn't make you a great offensive coordinator.
Okay, I feel good about it. He might be my first choice of anyone. And it's because I love the continuity, especially because Brady's going to play another 3 years, Giselle. He's playing another three. I don't want to hear this. I don't hear this stuff. You just traded the kid. You committed to Tom because he committed to you, and now you can't get into the next year and talk about your long-term health. You're talking football for the next 3 years. So Brady's your quarterback for the next 3 years. I love that it's the same system, same playbook, same everything. And so I'm glad it's Josh. And so, wait, Josh, Brady's not going to be, he'll be the first 2 years of Josh. You know, Josh will get 1 or 2 years of carryover with Brady if he plays three, which I think he should. So that's on the table. Josh is the next guy. I think he pretty much confirmed it. How do you feel about that? And I'll give you one more quickly. Bedard dropped in, as he likes to do, the sneaky little flamethrower. Snuck into his Belichick column about the Malcolm Butler situation in the Super Bowl. This is what Greg Bedard wrote about the benching of Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl. He says, until I hear otherwise, I'm going to believe Belichick had his reasons, which stemmed from Butler's unfocused play during the season. And I've heard from a source the Butler decision emanated from another strong defensive voice, and Belichick merely consented. So another strong defensive voice. Could that be a defensive coach? Could that be a defensive player?
I know what Jimmy's theory is.
And this coach, player, defensive voice, is that what he called it? A defensive...
strong defensive voice.
Strong defensive voice recommended to Bill, you can't play this guy. And Bill said, okay, I'm not going to play this guy.
Your thought? Jimmy, who's your theory?
Steven Belichick, safeties coach.
It's a good one.
I'll tell you, that was a good one. I have to admit, that was the first name that popped into my head. One. I said, ooh, is that a way of saying his son went to the old man?
That's
went to
one.
Bill and said, yeah, Dad, don't play this guy.
Either way, it's still a mistake. Not starting him is fine. No problem. You saw something you didn't like, don't start him.
See, I don't think it was Steve Bell. I mean, I don't think it was his son.
But either way, I don't think people have a real problem with not starting him. If you saw something you didn't like and you thought he wasn't ready for the game, don't start him. No problem.
There's no shortage of candidates. It could have been Stephon Gilmore.
But when you get into the third quarter and you can't stop the backup quarterback and you're playing dime formation with 5-6 guys out there and he's not one of them, that's a joke that you didn't at least try it.
I mean, to me, though, a strong defensive voice has to be one that Belichick would agree with.
Right.
Stephon Gilmore goes in and talks to Bill Belichick. Belichick would say,
get the hell out of here.
Shut the hell up.
Well, he gave him all that money.
They run a pick play or a bunch formation for crying out loud, and you're lost. Don't tell me to do anything.
And Stephon could be saying the whole year, you know, he was mad about the money that I got. He looked at it as his.
No, I like your conspiracy theory better. Who is the strong defensive voice?
Oh, Pat Chung.
Bill's guy.
And he just got a completely undeserved contract.
We would call that
well.
Hush money.
Hush money.
Yeah.
I would say McCourty. That's who I would say. I would say McCourty said, you know what? Butler and Gilmore can't communicate. That's a problem. One of them can't play, and Gilmore's playing better, okay. So don't play Butler.
Michael Felger, Tony Mazzara.